Chapter 4. Well, Annalisa whispered, forgetting to thread her needle. Why, a coffin, to be sure, right on the top step of the chancel Emma's folks' Episcopalians, and she would have a church wedding, though his mother raised a terrible rumpus over it. Well, there it set, right in front of where the minister stood that was going to marry him, a coffin covered with a black velvet pall with a gold fringe, and a gates ajar in white camellias atop of it. Goodness, said Evelina, starting, there's a knock. Who can it be? Shuddered Annalisa, still under the spell of Miss Mellon's hallucination. Evelina rose and lit a candle, to guide her through the shop. They heard her turn the key of the outer door, and a gust of night air stirred the close atmosphere of the back room. Then there was a sound of vivacious exclamations, and Evelina returned with Mr. Ramey. Annalisa's heart rocked like a boat in a heavy sea, and the dressmaker's eyes, distended with curiosity, sprang eagerly from face to face. I just thought I'd call in again, said Mr. Ramey, evidently somewhat disconcerted by the presence of Miss Mellon's. Us to see how the clock's behaving, he added with his hollow-cheeked smile. Oh, she's behaving beautiful, said Annalisa, but we're real glad to see you all the same. Miss Mellon's, let me make you acquainted with Mr. Ramey. The dressmaker tossed back her head, and dropped her lids in condescending recognition of the stranger's presence, and Mr. Ramey responded by an awkward bow. After the first moment of constraint, a renewed sense of satisfaction filled the consciousness of the three women. The Bunner sisters were not sorry to let Miss Mellon see that they received an occasional evening visit, and Miss Mellon's was clearly enchanted at the opportunity of pouring her latest tale into a new ear. As for Mr. Ramey, he adjusted himself to the situation with greater ease than might have been expected, and Evelina, who had been sorry that he should enter the room while the remains of supper still lingered on the table, blushed with pleasure at his good-humored offer to help her clear away. The table cleared, Annalisa suggested a game of cards, and it was after 11 o'clock when Mr. Ramey rose to take leave. His adieu were so much less abrupt than on the occasion of his first visit that Evelina was able to satisfy her sense of etiquette by escorting him, candle in hand, to the outer door, and as the two disappeared into the shop, Miss Mellon's playfully turned to Annalisa. Well, well, Miss Bunner, she murmured, jerking her chin in the direction of the retreating figures, I'd no idea your sister was keeping company. On to think. Annalisa, roused from a state of dreamy beatitude, turned her timid eyes on the dressmaker. Oh, you're mistaken, Miss Mellon's. We don't fairly know Mr. Ramey. Miss Mellon smiled incredulously. Ooh, go long, Miss Bunner. I guess there'll be a wedding somewheres round here before spring, and I'll be real offended if I ain't asked to make the dress. I've always seen her in a gourd satin with ruchings. Annalisa made no answer. She had grown very pale, and her eyes lingered searchingly on Evelina as the younger sister re-entered the room. Evelina's cheeks were pink, and her blue eyes glittered. But it seemed to Annalisa that the coquettish tilt of her head regrettably emphasized the weakness of her receding chin. It was the first time that Annalisa had ever seen a flaw in her sister's beauty, and her involuntary criticism startled her like a secret disloyalty. That night, after the light had been put out, the elder sister knelt longer than usual at her prayers. In the silence of the darkened room, she was offering up certain dreams and aspirations whose brief blossoming had lent a transient freshness to her days. She wondered now how she could ever have supposed that Mr. Ramey's visits had another cause than the one Miss Mellon suggested. Had not the sight of Evelina first inspired him with a sudden solicitude for the welfare of the clock? And what charms, but Evelina's, could have induced him to repeat his visit? Grief held up its torch to the frail fabric of Annalisa's illusions, and with a firm heart she watched them shrivel into ashes. Then, rising from her knees full of the chill joy of renunciation, she laid a kiss on the crimping pins of the sleeping Evelina, and crept under the bedspread at her side. During the months that followed, Mr. Ramey visited the sisters with increasing frequency. It became his habit to call on them every Sunday evening, and occasionally during the week he would find an excuse for dropping in unannounced as they were settling down to their work beside the lamp. Annalisa noticed that Evelina now took the precaution of putting on her crimson bow every evening before supper, and that as he had refurbished with a bit of carefully washed lace the black silk which they still called new, because it had been bought a year after Annalisa's. Mr. Ramey, as he grew more intimate, became less conversational, and after the sisters had blushingly accorded him the privilege of a pipe he began to permit himself long stretches of meditative silence that were not without charm to his hostesses. There was something at once fortifying and pacific in the sense of that tranquil male presence in an atmosphere which had so long quivered with little feminine doubts and distresses. And the sisters fell into the habit of saying to each other, in moments of uncertainty, we'll ask Mr. Ramey when he comes, and of accepting his verdict, whatever it might be, with a fatalistic readiness that relieved them of all responsibility. When Mr. Ramey drew the pipe from his mouth and became, in his turn, confidential, the acuteness of their sympathy grew almost painful to the sisters. With passionate participation they listened to the story of his early struggles in Germany, and of the long illness which had been the cause of his recent misfortunes. The name of the Mrs. Hochmuller, an old comrade's widow, who had nursed him through his fever, was greeted with reverential sighs and an inward pang of envy whenever it recurred in his biographical monologues. And once when the sisters were alone, Evelina called a responsive flush to Annalisa's brow by saying suddenly, without the mention of any name, I wonder what she's like? One day toward spring, Mr. Ramey, who had by this time become as much a part of their lives as the letter carrier or the milkman, ventured the suggestion that the ladies should accompany him to an exhibition of stereopticon views which was to take place at Chickering Hall on the following evening. After their first breathless H of pleasure there was a silence of mutual consultation, which Annalisa at last broke by saying, you better go with Mr. Ramey, Evelina. I guess we don't both want to leave the store at night. Evelina, with such protests as politeness demanded, acquiesced in this opinion, and spent the next day in trimming a white chip bonnet with forget-me-nots of her own making. Annalisa brought out her mosaic brooch, a cashmere scarf of their mother's, was taken from its linen cerements, and thus adorned Evelina blushingly departed with Mr. Ramey, while the elder sister sat down in her place at the pinking machine. It seemed to Annalisa that she was alone for hours, and she was surprised when she heard Evelina tap on the door to find that the clock marked only 10:30. It must have gone wrong again, she reflected as she rose to let her sister in. The evening had been brilliantly interesting, and several striking stereopticon views of Berlin had afforded Mr. Ramey the opportunity of enlarging on the marvels of his native city. He said he'd love to show it all to me, Evelina declared as Annalisa conned her glowing face. Did you ever hear anything so silly? I didn't know which way to look. Annalisa received this confidence with a sympathetic murmur. My bonnet is becoming, isn't it? Evelina went on irrelevantly, smiling at her reflection in the cracked glass above the chest of drawers. You're just lovely, said Annalisa. Spring was making itself unmistakably known to the distrustful New Yorker by an increased harshness of wind and prevalence of dust, when one day Evelina entered the back room at supper time with a cluster of jonquils in her hand. I was just that foolish, she answered Annalisa's wondering glance, I couldn't help buying them. I felt as if I must have something pretty to look at right away. Oh, sister, said Annalisa, in trembling sympathy. She felt that special indulgence must be conceded to those in Evelina's state since he had had her own fleeting vision of such mysterious longings as the words betrayed. Evelina, meanwhile, had taken the bundle of dried grasses out of the broken china vase, and was putting the jonquils in their place with touches that lingered down their smooth stems and blade-like leaves. Ain't they pretty? She kept repeating as she gathered the flowers into a starry circle. Seems as if spring was really here, don't it? And Eliza remembered that it was Mr. Ramey's evening. When he came, the Teutonic eye for anything that blooms made him turn at once to the jonquils. Ain't they pretty? He said. Seems like as if the spring was really here. Don't it? Evelina exclaimed, thrilled by the coincidence of their thought. Tease just what I was saying to my sister. And Eliza got up suddenly and moved away. She remembered that as he had not wound the clock the day before. Evelina was sitting at the table. The jonquils rose slenderly between herself and Mr. Ramey. Oh, she murmured with vague eyes, how I'd love to get away somewheres into the country this very minute somewheres, where it was green and quiet. Seems as if I couldn't stand the city another day. But Ann Eliza noticed that she was looking at Mr. Ramey, and not at the flowers. I guess we might go to Central Park some Sunday, their visitor suggested. Oh, you ever go there, Miss Evelina? No, we don't very often. Leastways we ain't been for a good while. She sparkled at the prospect. Tea would be lovely, wouldn't it, Ann Eliza? Why, yes, said the elder sister, coming back to her seat. Well, why don't we go next Sunday? Mr. Ramey continued. And we'll invite Miss Mellons too, that'll make a gossy little party. That night when Evelina undressed, she took a jonquil from the vase, and pressed it with a certain ostentation between the leaves of her prayer book. And Eliza, covertly observing her, felt that Evelina was not sorry to be observed, and that her own acute consciousness of the act was somehow regarded as magnifying its significance. The following Sunday broke blue and warm. The Bunner sisters were habitual churchgoers, but for once they left their prayer books on the whatnot, and 10 o'clock found them, gloved and bonneted, awaiting Miss Mellon's knock. Miss Mellons presently appeared in a glitter of jet sequins and spangles, with a tale of having seen a strange man prowling under her windows till he was called off at dawn by a Confederate's whistle, and shortly afterward came Mr. Ramey, his hair brushed with more than usual care, his broad hands encased in gloves of olive green kid. The little party set out for the nearest streetcar, and a flutter of mingled gratification and embarrassment stirred Ann Eliza's bosom when it was found that Mr. Ramey intended to pay their fares. Nor did he fail to live up to this opening liberality, for after guiding them through the mall and the ramble, he led the way to a rustic restaurant where, also at his expense, they fared idyllically on milk and lemon pie. After this they resumed their walk, strolling on with the slowness of unaccustomed holiday makers from one path to another through budding shrubberies, past grass banks sprinkled with lilac crocuses, and under rocks on which the forsythia lay like sudden sunshine. Everything about her seemed new, and miraculously lovely to Ann Eliza, but she kept her feelings to herself, leaving it to Evelina to exclaim at the hepaticas under the shady ledges, and to Miss Mellons, less interested in the vegetable than in the human world, to remark significantly on the probable history of the persons they met. All the alleys were thronged with promenaders and obstructed by perambulators, and Miss Mellon's running commentary threw a glare of lurid possibilities over the placid family groups and their romping progeny. Ann Eliza was in no mood for such interpretations of life, but, knowing that Miss Mellons had been invited for the sole purpose of keeping her company, she continued to cling to the dressmaker's side, letting Mr. Ramey lead the way with Evelina. Miss Mellons, stimulated by the excitement of the occasion, grew more and more discursive, and her ceaseless talk, and the kaleidoscopic whirl of the crowd, were unspeakably bewildering to Ann Eliza. Her feet, accustomed to the slippered ease of the shop, ached with the unfamiliar effort of walking, and her ears with the din of the dressmaker's anecdotes. But every nerve in her was aware of Evelina's enjoyment, and she was determined that no weariness of hers should curtail it. Yet even her heroism shrank from the significant glances which Miss Mellons presently began to cast at the couple in front of them. Ann Eliza could bear to connive at Evelina's bliss, but not to acknowledge it to others. At length Evelina's feet also failed her, and she turned to suggest that they ought to be going home. Her flushed face had grown pale with fatigue, but her eyes were radiant. The return lived in Annalisa's memory with the persistence of an evil dream. The horse cars were packed with the returning throng, and they had to let a dozen go by before they could push their way into one that was already crowded. Annalisa had never before felt so tired. Even Miss Mellon's flow of narrative ran dry, and they sat silent, wedged between a Negro woman and a pockmarked man with a bandaged head, while the car rumbled slowly down the squalid avenue to their corner. Evelina and Mr. Ramey sat together in the forward part of the car, and Annalisa could catch Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.